This is the Anderson Files on PodClip. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President, Retirement Services, and partner of Finestone Partners. Finestone Partners is an independent firm with securities offered through Four Point Capital. And now your host, Mike Anderson.
Ransomware, how it can impact you and your business. I'm talking today with Matthew Kelly, Chief Executive Officer of B2G Global Strategies. B2G Global Strategies provides investigations and security services for business, government, and individuals. Matt is primarily responsible for securing client engagements, coordinating all investigations and security issues, and playing an overall leadership role in day-to-day matters involving the company. Prior to joining B2G, Matt worked in the academic world, where he taught at the University of California, Los Angeles. Ooh, I like that. And Occidental College, specializing in topics related to crime and government security. As an investigator, Matt has worked on scores of complex cases involving criminal elements and organizations, and has authored dozens of reports, white papers, and threat assessments for clients across a range of industries. His areas of investigation focus have included theft, stalking, extortion, embezzlement, terrorism, cybercrime, real estate fraud, money laundering, and narcotics trafficking. His areas of expertise include crime, governmental security, and analysis of intelligence. Matt, good morning. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Mike. Thanks for having me.
To get started, what is ransomware and what risks does it pose to businesses?
So ransomware is malicious software that encrypts user data and thereby shuts down either some or all of a target's IT infrastructure. So if you're hit with ransomware, you're sort of immediately put in a dilemma, which is that if your systems are partially or completely frozen, your business operations grind to a halt, which has potentially a high financial cost. Which is precisely the dilemma that the hacker seeks to put you in, right? Because then they materialize and offer you a decryption key that, in theory at least, will unlock your systems and allow you to go back to business as normal for a price, right? So that doesn't always happen. According to one study, about 20% of the time, the attacker gets their money and then does not deliver the decryption key. But in any case, that's the basic structure of the attack. Now, the ways in which ransomware get into people's IT infrastructure vary. It can enter a system through an email that contains a malicious link or an attachment. It could be malware concealed in an advertisement. It could be an infected thumb drive, a direct hack. You know, there's multiple different avenues in, which is part of what makes it viable, right? You only need one weakness in your system in order for the ransomware to get in. Should I say a word about this issue of paying for the decryption key back?
Just a question before that. How does a company or an individual find out that they've been attacked? I would imagine that people dismiss it initially, that it's not real, and they blow it off. But how do they typically realize that this is really happening?
Their IT infrastructure starts to shut down, right? So your employees are working on their computers, and suddenly the computers are offline, and they don't work, or they can't access the computers with their passwords and so forth. So if it's a legit ransomware attack, it speaks for itself. You'll know that you've been hit because your systems are suddenly inoperable.
And so a whole company can just be paralyzed. So if it's a manufacturer, a law firm, everybody in the firm realizes something's wrong and it needs to be addressed.
Yes, very often that's exactly what happens, yeah. So, and as I say, it's not always a total paralysis of the operation. Sometimes people's IT infrastructure is spread out across, you know, subcontractors and so forth, but enough of your infrastructure will be hit typically that you'll know something is up.
How early do you typically get involved?
We typically get involved on the back end. So this is something we can maybe talk about in a little bit in more detail, but when it comes to people insulating themselves against cyber attack generally and ransomware in particular, we're dealing with a learning curve here. I don't even know if you want to call it a learning curve. It's more like a psychological delay or something like this, right? The people are a lot more vulnerable. Companies are a lot more vulnerable than they realize. And so the way most people learn and then begin to take seriously, learn about and then begin to take seriously ransomware is because they got hit by it. And then people like us come in to manage the back end and negotiate with the hackers and things like this. And I say we can get into the details of that maybe a little more in a bit, but that's the scenario right now. And actually, so long as that is the scenario, you're going to see what you're seeing, which is a kind of gold rush of ransomware, because the hackers know that this is the case. They know that people have not caught up to the fact, they've not reckoned with the reality of their own vulnerability. So there's a kind of mad rush to hit as many vulnerable and potentially lucrative targets with ransomware as possible.
Matt, what are the solutions available to address the risk of ransomware attacks?
This sort of touches on your last comment. There's, you know, two basic tiers of protection. You have preparation, and then you have response, right? So the big takeaway here is that you want to be prepared to thwart an attack rather than having to respond to a successful attack to which you failed to prepare. So preparation means cybersecurity training, most importantly for your employees, but in many cases also for your executives. And executive cybersecurity training usually has to be a little more tailored than for ordinary employees, because a particular executive may be targeted, and so you have to kind of tailor the training to the individual. Preparation also means often penetration testing, where a team of cybersecurity professionals probe your IT infrastructure for vulnerabilities and then help you to patch them up. Now that's sort of tier one. Tier two, in terms of solutions, is that you are on the backside of an attack for which you were not prepared, and now you're going to need incident response. And of course, you need to have an incident response plan in place already, ideally. And in the case of ransomware attacks, companies like mine, BTG, just to take us as an example, you know, we put a team at the disposal of our client, and that team has long experience in dealing with cybersecurity intrusions. You know, in the case of our cyber team, we also have a library of decryption software for a number of known ransomwares, which in some cases enables us to recover and decrypt systems without paying ransom. And then we also have extensive intelligence on, you know, the existing known ransomware actors that are out there. And so we can carry on negotiations with these people. And, you know, there are a number of other tools that come into play. But having said that, although that's a very important service to have available to people, on the whole, we really want to move to a place where incident response is the minority, right? And preemptive preparation is the majority, right? Where people are taking cybersecurity seriously enough that they're insulating themselves against attack in the first place.
I'm chatting with Matt Kelly, CEO of B2G Global Strategies, on the impact of ransomware, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Matt, with what you're saying, it's really an ongoing effort, and to protect yourself and having a good defense is the best offense?
Yeah, that's correct. That's exactly right.
It seems that cyber attacks are typically thought of as emanating from highly skilled hackers lying outside one's network. But looking into many of the major incidents that have been reported, that you've reported on and have been involved with, you can see the problem is very often located inside the company. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly correct. So, and that's why training employees is so critical in terms of cybersecurity. But I mean, you really have two scenarios that you run into when it comes to employees, right, and the vulnerabilities that can attach to employees. In the first scenario, you have employees who lack any kind of training regarding password best practices, anti-phishing best practices, and so on. And they're just low-hanging fruit for hackers. So, you know, a hacker comes into possession of an employee's login credentials for whatever, you know, website that has nothing to do with their work, right, online. And in some number of cases, when the hacker uses those same credentials, the same password and username, as a key to unlock the employee's work email, it works, right? Because the employee is using the same, which you're not supposed to do, the employee is using the same username and password for their private accounts as they are for their public accounts and their work accounts, right? So now you have an intrusion on your hands, and that can lead to very bad places. Alternatively, you know, an employee just may not know, again, from lack of training, not to click a link in an unfamiliar email. And when they do, now you have a spyware problem. So, I mean, that scenario, that sort of range of scenarios right there, that accounts for, I would say, a large majority, in a large majority of the cases that B2G has worked on, where significant sums of money have been lost. The intrusion, when we go back and retrace the steps of the hackers, the intrusion started at a low level with an untrained employee. It's extremely common. It's the normal scenario, right? So that's one, right, where you have the employee who's just simply not trained in cybersecurity, and that creates vulnerabilities at a low level. In a second scenario, you have an employee who, irrespective of their cybersecurity training, is not happy, right? They're disgruntled, or they're, for whatever reason, ill-intentioned, right, towards the company or towards someone in the company. And that person then makes malicious use of their access to your systems, right, which is arguably even more difficult to anticipate and respond to. In fact, I was reading a survey recently of these types of incidents where it's a badly motivated employee who decides to sabotage the system. And it found that in cases where these people are caught, in the majority of cases, when the employee was hired, they had no malicious intent, no bad feelings towards any superiors or anything like that at the company. But in the course of their employment, something went wrong, right? And they got upset, and then they resorted to this kind of behavior. So it's very hard to anticipate this kind of situation, but it happens, you know, frequently enough. And as I say, you know, in our experience, those types of scenarios, they're usually after-action situations where a person who has access to sensitive information, you know, is well-positioned to put it to nefarious use, right? And once they've done so, a cybersecurity team often enough can retrace their steps and sort of reverse engineer what happened. And the difficulty of that task for the cybersecurity team is going to depend upon the technological sophistication of the culprit, right? The good news, as it were, in our experience, is that it's fairly common for the culprit to overestimate their own competence at covering their tracks. I think typically because they're envisioning their antagonists as, you know, whoever happens to be above them in the power structure of the company, which might not be a very cyber-aware person, right? And they're not picturing a team of experienced cyber investigators with all sorts of forensic tools they know nothing about coming in and retracing their steps. I should also say on this that, you know, I've given you sort of two scenarios where you've got the employee who lacks training, and then you've got the disgruntled employee who intentionally sabotages the company. There is a border region between the disgruntled insider and the naive or untrained employee, and that's the untrained employee who becomes vulnerable to extortion, which is also a scenario we run into. And under conditions of extortion, that employee then facilitates an intrusion into the systems, right? So I need to take a sort of hypothetical scenario that's fairly close to the kinds of things we've seen. You have cases where even pretty high-level employees, maybe the VP, maybe a lawyer who works in the company who handles a lot of legal matters, same, just like with a low-level employee, has poor password management practices. They get hacked, and what the hackers learn is that this person has accounts, right? Not just Facebook and LinkedIn, but, adult friend finder and Ashley Madison and Racy types of accounts, right? So now you have a guy who's a lawyer in a big company, access to lots of sensitive financial and personal information, and now he's being communicated with by hackers who say, hey, we know about your adult friend finder account. Maybe we got into your adult friend finder account. We know what you've been doing. And we also know you're married and so forth, right? And so now you got someone who's not ill-intentioned toward the company. He's just being forced by the hackers to choose between his, family life and his work life. And in cases like that, a lot of times a person's going to choose their family over their work, and they're going to give the hackers what they want. So those are all types of scenarios that you can see originate with internal vulnerabilities that are targeted and turned into opportunities by the hackers.
My guest is Matt Kelly, and we're discussing ransomware and its impact on companies and individuals. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Matt, as far as sizes of companies, both big and small, are small companies more vulnerable to large, where the smaller companies may not have as much infrastructure and oversight?
They might be more vulnerable in terms of infrastructure and oversight and that kind of thing, but they're less vulnerable just because if they're smaller, the revenues are smaller as well, right? So, I mean, the big malware attacks, to stay on the topic of malware, they're usually carried out by not just, sophisticated attackers in terms of the knowledge of cybersecurity, but these are people that they do their homework in terms of understanding what the capability of the company is to pay, right? And they're looking for a big payday. That's what they're after, right? So, if you're a company, we've seen companies recently where, they're posting $1.5 billion in revenue over the past year, and the hackers probe your systems and find that you're vulnerable, you're a much more attractive target to them than a smaller company. But having said that, companies that are reasonably profitable, just not enormously profitable, tend not to have great cybersecurity, right? I mean, in terms of what we have from the survey data, there's a recent Wall Street Journal survey that showed that about half of companies that are posting, $50 million in revenue or less, have no cybersecurity at all, no cybersecurity plan in place at all. So, those are certainly very vulnerable companies as well.
Let's talk about the aftermath of some of these attacks on business and government agencies. What have the costs been?
So, I mean, I mentioned there's a kind of gold rush among hackers right now to cash in on this situation where they know that enormous numbers of companies with lots of money to spend or pay out in ransoms aren't protected. And this is, it's accelerating in real time. I mean, my company alone sees a steady stream of ransomware cases, and obviously you see them reported in the press all the time. So, I mean, 2018, the city of Atlanta was struck. You might have seen that in the papers as a ransomware attack. And the attackers deleted a bunch of legal documents. They deleted police dash cam footage. And that ended up costing the city about $10 million, I believe, as I recall. More recently, I think in 2020, CWT, which is a travel company based in the U.S., they got hit with a ransomware called Ragnar Locker. And that was actually an interesting case because Reuters, in that case, got a hold of the dialogue between the company representatives and the hackers. And the hackers basically said to them, look, what do you want to do? You can pay us for the decryption key, or you can pay for all the lawsuits that are going to result from your customers' data having been compromised, and the decline in revenue that's going to result from the reputational hit you're about to take for having let this happen, and so forth. And in that case, the hackers demanded $10 million. And the company, this was a company actually that I was thinking of, they posted revenues of $1.5 billion, right? So this is no doubt part of what motivated the attack. And they negotiated the payment down to about half of that, to I think $4.5 million, which is in Bitcoin, by the way, in mid-2020. So that paid off very well for the hackers. And then, you know, a third case, Travelex, which is a currency exchange based out of London, they got hit on New Year's Eve 2019 with the R-Evil or Revel ransomware, which is becoming pretty infamous at this point. That cost them over $2 million to decrypt, reportedly, 5 gigabytes of data. And in the meantime, they were out of operation or full operation for, you know, weeks. So that, no doubt, took a big bite out of their revenues for that period. And that same group, actually, the R-Evil or Revel, they also hit a major law firm last year in May, which was all over the papers, because this law firm represented a number of celebrity clients, including Madonna and Lady Gaga and U2 and Elton John and so forth. And the hackers got a hold of all these private materials, you know, from these celebrities' emails and so forth. I don't remember seeing it reported that they paid in the end in that case. But, I mean, big picture, the upshot of these and other cases is that ransomware payouts are trending upward. So there was a report just last week in Tripwire which showed that payments were up about 170% from 2019 to 2020. So that they're now averaging over $300,000, right, in payments to decrypt systems. You know, so to go back to your point earlier about smaller companies and scaling, you are beginning to see, you know, school districts in the Bay Area, down here in L.A. getting hit, anywhere where you could get a payout in that range, right, you're vulnerable.
My guest is Matt Kelly, and we're discussing ransomware and its impact on companies and individuals. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Matt, with respect to individuals as opposed to companies or organizations, what are the typical vulnerabilities that you see when it comes to cybersecurity?
So the one I always start with when it comes to just everyday people is passwords, which, you know, has obviously come up repeatedly in these scenarios that I've laid out for you, these hack scenarios. And, you know, this applies and is as valuable as much to the average person as it is to celebrities or fairly well-known people. Although you would be surprised the number of times we've seen high-profile, extremely wealthy people who seemingly don't know anything about password protocols and who end up paying not just money, but, I mean, their lives are miserated, at least for a period of time, because they get hacked. So, I mean, the key here to understand, and, you know, I'm sure a lot of people know this already, but many don't. The key to understand is that your private data, at least some of your private data, is available on the dark web, okay? So, you have a number of high-profile companies that hold valuable private data on their users that suffer data breaches, right? And these data breaches slip right past public awareness in most cases. I've mentioned in the past LinkedIn, they had a data breach, and, you know, it was out there in the press if you were looking for it, but LinkedIn is very motivated for their customers not to know that this even happened, because it's a hit to their reputation, right? They've allowed their customers' data to be compromised. So you have big data breaches, which makes the chances very good that your private data is, you know, your usernames and your passwords and so forth for some number of accounts are available to hackers. So if you're doing what so many people do, which is using the same username and password for multiple accounts, you're leaving yourself wide open from a cybersecurity standpoint. If I'm a hacker and I can get into 5 of your accounts using one of your passwords because you keep using the same password over and over again, I can learn a lot about you. I can gather up a lot of your personal identifying information, and a decent hacker is going to put all that information to use. So, you know, the solution in that case, the basic solution, is to get a password manager, LastPass is a password manager I recommend to people, but there are others. And what a password manager will do is it will give you individual, basically uncrackable passwords for each of your different accounts. So, and these will be passwords that you could never memorize because they're too long and they're random and they don't have anything to do with your pets or your children or birthdays or all the things people use to remember their passwords. And so, this obviously solves the main problem people face with their passwords, which is remembering them, right, and not wanting to consult a list of passwords for all of their different accounts every time they log into one of them, which is precisely what makes them vulnerable, right? So if I'm a hacker and I come into possession of one of your passwords and it's, Fifi 2020 or something like this, right away I know you don't have a password manager, which means that you're likely to be using the same passwords or similar passwords for your other accounts, so you're low-hanging fruit. Whereas if I come across, a password and data breach data, and it's a long string of random characters, I'm probably not even going to try that password on your other accounts because it's obvious that you are using a password manager, right? And even if I could get into one of your accounts with that password, I'm not going to be able to use it to unlock your other accounts, right? Because your password manager keeps different passwords for each account. So that's a very simple thing that people can do to just remove themselves from the low-hanging hacking fruit, as it were. And then, as I said on other occasions, this is a point that's not often made, but I think it's important for people, particularly people who, are not going to pick up books on cybersecurity and learn sort of the technical side of all this, to understand the logic of many successful hacking schemes. I think one of the things that makes people vulnerable to hacking, which I say is rarely touched on, it's the failure to appreciate the psychology of hacking. People tend to imagine hackers, hovering over their keyboards, breaking into the Pentagon's computer systems or whatever, and there's obviously some truth in that image, but I think people are on a better basic footing in terms of insulating themselves against attack by hackers if they understand what I would regard as the core principle of most hacks, which is getting people to do something called defaulting to truth. And that's a term that comes not from the cyber literature, but from the psychology literature, particularly from a psychologist from the University of Alabama who's written a book about what he calls truth default theory. And truth default theory basically says that all things being equal, people believe what they hear. They believe what they see. So, I could give you a million examples, but, I arrive at your house and I tell you, I just came from the bank, right? You're going to believe me, all things being equal, right? If there are things that trigger your suspicion about me, you might not believe me, right? If you know me to be a liar, or if I'm wet up to my knees and covered in mud or something else, right, get some other indication that I'm not, in fact, just coming from a bank, you might disbelieve me. But if those things aren't there, you're just going to assume that what I'm saying is true. And there's a whole discussion about why we're like this as human beings, and perhaps from an evolutionary perspective, it's because it would just be unbearable to be relentlessly suspicious of everybody all the time, and society operates more smoothly when people give one another the benefit of the doubt and so forth. But in any case, as I say, people default to believing what others say unless their suspicions are triggered, but that very fact can be run in the other direction, right? So rather than triggering your suspicions when I speak or when I appear online, I might instead send reassuring signals that reinforce your sense that I can be believed, right? And that's something that hackers understand implicitly, decent hackers, good hackers. And that's why when you get an email that contains spyware, that an unwary person ends up clicking on, what does the email look like, right? It looks just like an email from Amazon or from some other professional seeming entity. And the closer the hacker hits the mark in that regard, the more likely the target is to default to truth and assume that what they're looking at is what it appears to be, an Amazon email or whatever. And that's all it takes. It just takes the recipient defaulting to truth for a few seconds, just long enough to click a link, download an attachment, and now you're had, right? So, these are two sort of very general pieces of advice for non-specialists that I think can be helpful, right? Get your password act together, get a password manager, and then just remember that the whole point of most hacks is to get you to assume that you're looking at one thing when really it's something else. So you always want to take a second look at any email from a company that you recognize that asks you to click a link or call a number or anything like that. You take a second look, make sure it's from Amazon, you know, from an Amazon.com email, etc. And, you know, people can look into this online. There are other sort of basic protocols you can adopt that allow you to remove yourself from the ranks of the victims.
To learn more, how can listeners contact you?
They can visit either one of our websites. We've been talking about cyber today, and as I said, we have a cyber team that handles all of our cyber cases. So they can go to b2gcyber.com, b2gcyber.com. And then we also offer a range of other services, including, you know, financial investigations and security and threat assessments, litigation support, and so forth. And for those services, they can go to b2gstrategies.com, b2gstrategies.com.
Matt, thanks so much for guesting today on this very important subject. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer, Mark Allen, producer. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Keep calm and keep listening.
You've been listening to the Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclip.io and check on the financial box for more information on the Anderson Files.